I think that when you do think of yourself as a business, what you start to do is you start to, like, say if you're like, oh, all I make is $500 a month. Okay, so X amount's going to go to expenses and X amount's going to go to whatever. But then you need to think about, okay, how much am I putting into promotion? How much am I putting into marketing? How much am I putting into this? How much, like, how am I breaking this down so that I'm investing in myself, investing in my own business and looking at myself like I am a Fortune 500 or whatever. And that's really how it should be, because that's how you're going to create growth.
Welcome to the Stokecast, where each week we bring you an inspiring athlete, adventurer, or entrepreneur and dig into their stories and strategies for balancing work, life, and adventure while having fun and making a difference. I'm Jonathan Ronzio.
And I'm Emily Holland. Thanks for joining us today.
Let's get to it. Have camera, will travel. Sound familiar? If you're one of the 3.1 million followers for Chris Burkhard, then it should. Have Camera Will Travel has been like literally just his Instagram bio for forever. That's the first thing that I saw when I followed him. And he is just an incredible, incredible photographer, storyteller on social and elsewhere with documentaries now, with a children's book that I bought for my nephew.
So cute.
I know, it's amazing. What do you think was one of the biggest takeaways from our chat with Chris Burkhard?
Well, I felt like there's two big ones. One of the ones that I love is that he is just talking about investing in what you're trying to do. So there's two aspects of that. It was like investing literally your time and money into your career and becoming a better, more well-rounded, you know, it, for his case, photographer, but just in general. And that can also mean like you need to fill the spaces, the empty spaces on your resume with things that will fill you out and make you like more marketable to people. So he talks a lot about that. It's very, I mean, it seems like common sense, but you need to like hear it from someone else to be like, yeah, I should actually like take that course or like spend money on a new camera so I can like take better photos or whatever it is. It's important.
It is important. I mean, to be perfectly honest and like candid myself.
Hit us with the truth.
Yeah, you want it? I mean, well, so going back to the original, like, Between the Peaks, which became, like, my foothold for everything I do in the adventure space, I didn't get paid anything for Between the Peaks. It was just an idea that my friends and I had, and we wanted to go and do, and we were going to do anyway, and it was like, if nothing else, going to be the trip of a lifetime that, like, then we'd go get jobs afterwards. But, like, we spent all of our savings, like, took out, like, 3 credit cards, and, like, I maxed those out, and,
nice.
I mean, I spent thousands of dollars to go and do this trip because I believed in this idea and then made this film and then was able to leverage that after the fact. Like Between the Peaks never made me any money, but I was able to leverage that film to go and have conversations with brands and be like, hey, I could do stuff like this. And it wasn't immediate either. I mean, for years after Between the Peaks, I was like, if anybody was following me on, you know, exploreinspired.com or on any of my social channels, it may have looked like I was like a full-time paid adventure traveler because that's like the brand persona that I was creating. But the honest truth of it was like most of those trips and most of the epic adventures I was just paying for. I was doing like marketing work and freelance like website and design and all that kind of stuff to pay for the trips that I was going and having to like build the resume of what I was really trying to create to get to the point where, you know, now I can have a conversation with a client and get paid to, like, literally a couple days ago, I got back from the Philippines where I was there for 2 weeks filming a documentary that the whole trip was paid for. And like,
it's a grind.
Yeah, for sure. And that was like literally the investment in myself was everything that I've done the last 5-6 years, really.
Mm-hmm. And going to like conferences and you read a ton of books and you like are trying to get better at like being a photographer by like surrounding yourself with other photographers, like all these things going together. That's what people have to do according to Chris and according to just like, hey, if you're following Chris's success, you should just listen to him. Just listen to him.
Totally, yeah. I mean, and so that's a lot of what we'll talk about in this chat is just like, you know, if there's a dream career that you want, don't like go and ask somebody to give you the opportunity.
Take it.
Take the opportunity. Yeah. Go create the opportunity for yourself and prove that you can do it and that you deserve it.
Damn, we motivating out here. I mean, Chris is.
Chris is.
All right, enjoy.
All right, enjoy the chat with Chris Burkhard. How you doing, Chris?
Hey guys, how are you? Thank you so much for having me. I'm really grateful to be here.
Yeah, we're absolutely pumped to chat with you, man. Thanks for taking the time to get on the Stokecast.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So, dude, well, this was, you know, we got this scheduled after obviously catching you at Outdoor Retailer. You had spoken on the stage at the Ranger Station about turning your passion into a career. And we caught you afterwards. And obviously what we took away from that is that you picked up a camera, took a few photos, immediately you had millions of followers and you were successful, right?
Yeah. I mean, if that's what you got from it, no, I'm super stoked. I mean, I was trying to kind of do my due diligence to just be as honest as possible with people and let them know that, you know, there's absolutely no way to be an overnight success in any capacity, nor would you want that, because it would inhibit the opportunity for you to learn just what you're willing to go through to create a meaningful career, you know? So I think, yeah, I felt like I was kind of the bearer of bad news up there. Just like, you know, it's going to be this and it's going to be, you know, fire and brimstone and whatever, but I don't know, maybe it was a little different than all the other, like, you know, five tips to become successful. Like, I can't stand all that stuff. So,
right. No.
Well, I really appreciated the candid nature, the way that you were responding to the questions, because I mean, oftentimes we look at Instagram or like all the people that we're inspired by and we're like, oh my gosh, wouldn't that be amazing to live that life? And like, don't really see a lot of the stuff that happens before that, or the failures or the really hard times that they went through.
100%. I agree. 100%.
Yeah, so I think that brings us to one of our first questions, which is kind of a jump off from that, and a metaphor I think you used that resonated with Jonathan and I a lot is the idea of quote-unquote balance. You can't see it, but I'm quoting.
Yeah.
And I think one of the things you mentioned was the four burner metaphor, or the burners in general metaphor. And do you want to just give our listeners an idea of what that looks like?
100%. Yeah. I mean, first thing that's important is that, you know, this is definitely not my analogy, nor is it my quote or anything. It's just something that, it's just something I read somewhere that really resonated with me. I forget what book it was in. It might've been in a book called Take the Stairs or something like that. But I just remember vividly kind of hearing about this concept of, you know, if you were to kind of break down your life into four burners in terms of, you know, like a stove, right? You have one that represents family, one that represents your, you know, business, one that represents health, and the one that represents your friends. I mean, those are pretty much the four categories in which we usually break down our life. And what it said was, in order to be successful, you're going to have to turn off one of them. In order to be really successful, you're going to have to turn off two of them. And I just was like, wow, that's pretty heavy, and is also very true. And so I just have kind of realized, I thought about that a lot in my life, because I know that for me, I did have to turn off one of them. And I decided to turn off, I think, friendship really early on. You know, I didn't go to college, didn't really have any of that experience. I decided to kind of pursue photography and make that my main focus. And So I just really resonated with me, and that was it's a harsh thing to kind of like tell people, but I also think that there's a lot of truth there.
Totally. So. Yeah. That spoke to me so much as well. I mean, I think for anybody who is passionately pursuing something that they love, and you know, it's for you, for me, for many of us, it's climbing, it's travel, it's the outdoors, it's exploration, it's surfing, it's capturing those moments. And when that's what drives you, it's so hard to give the time to other things, to other burners, to balance, you know, what else is on the stove, right? So you said you had to turn off friendship. Was there a second that suffered along the way?
A second who?
A second aspect of your life, whether it was health or family.
Yeah, 100%. I would say that the secondary one, because I've never really wanted to give up, you know, I've never really wanted to compromise my family or their time. So I think health has been another big one too, you know, and I've more than anybody else, like, I've loved to get out and be active and this and that. But there's the harsh reality is like, you know, with the amount of time that I've spent traveling and being out on the road, like that's a real big thing that I've had to like kind of give up at times was the ability to have some amazing, like cool, like regimen, like, oh man, I'm going to go out and I'm going to run on a bike today, or I'm going to go climbing, or I'm going to do this. And just in general, having to like kind of give up a lot of the stuff that you maybe value in terms of like, I love surfing. Well, you're going to be working for the next 3 months in some remote part of the world. And that's something that you're going to have to give up because it's not going to happen, you know? So I think that there is a lot of compromise that comes with creating a job that, or any career that's really valuable. And I just think that, I just think that's like something I've always tried to be realistic with people about is like, you can be successful 100%. Anybody can. It's just a matter of how much are you willing to give up in order to be successful. Right. I mean, if that's all it came down to, it would be a really simple thing for everybody to understand. I feel like where things get complicated is when we start to look at this stuff like, oh, well, where's the recipe? Where's the key? Where's the, you know, the yada yada for success? When, what if people just told you, no, it's actually really easy. Anybody can do it. You just have to be willing to give up something. So you choose what that is and then you give it up.
And so obviously you did make those sacrifices and you found success, which you're continuing to grow and build and strive for more, but now you have a family, right? You were just in Redwoods and you have this whole new part of your world with a wife and kids to balance. And is that still something that suffers as you pursue photography and travel, or have you found a pretty good...
Absolutely. No, I mean, I'm not going to give you guys any fantasies or fairy tales. Like it absolutely does. Like you cannot sustain a family and travel without there being some level of, you know, sort of hardship that it goes through. And, I'll be the first one to tell you that, yeah, it's super challenging when you bring kids into the mix and you bring a lot of these people who like, you know, they look to you for not only their, you know, for food and sustenance and the necessities of, you know, being a dad, but also just to, like, to be there and be supportive and that stuff. And that's a harsh truth, I think, too. And it's something that can be very challenging, but also can be very worth it. Like, I also really value the fact that I can, like, go and teach my kids and take them to these amazing places. And I've been able to meet really incredible people through my career. Like, you know, I was able to take my kids to Pixar the other day and show them the studio because I've shown films there and I know people there, and that's so cool. And being able to just introduce them to so much stuff. So there's tons of value that comes from it, but it's just a matter of like kind of having to like pick your battles, you know? And what I've realized is that there is really effective ways in which you can kind of make some of that a lot easier on yourself. Like, for example, you know, the idea that, oh man, you're going to be, you know, gone for 3 weeks and you're going to try and like figure out, you know, how to talk to your wife or talk to your kids or whatever, the whole time you're gone, it might not be realistic. And so we often resort to like texting. And the thing about texting that I've found, this is just like a tip for anybody that wants to like, you know, maybe consider how they can, you know, make their relationship a little easier on the road, is that when you do that, you're kind of enacting this unnatural way of communicating. And I think that doesn't really like translate into like honest and good communication. So I've kind of realized or had to try in my life to just not text as much, you know, find time to take a call. It's required me to like get a sat phone. It's required me to like do certain things that maybe have costed a bit more money. But that has created a lot of value in my relationship because I take the time to let them know where I am. The biggest thing is if you come back from a trip, your family, your kids don't know where you are or didn't know where you've been. I mean, granted, they're going to know where you were, but if they don't know what you've been up to, then you've kind of already lost. Like they weren't involved. So I try to make sure that my family feels involved from the step one, you know?
Yeah, I love that. And that kind of goes into another question I had, which is a lot of times we have partners in situations like this, or for you, you have kids too now. But yeah. From the beginning,
you know, having that clear communication with your partner, especially if they have not chosen the same lifestyle as you, must be challenging. So was that always the case, or did you learn some hard lessons in the beginning with your wife now?
I think I got lucky because I've been with my wife since I was in high school, and okay. we've known each other for a really long time.
She knew what she was getting into with you.
There's any other... Yeah, but she also supported me in that early on. You know, it's really different when you're like, hey, I'm going to go out and I'm going to go to Yosemite this weekend and go shoot photographs. And, you know, hopefully I'll like, you know, you're like, this is a work trip and you put parentheses around it, you know, but the reality is you don't know if you're going to generate anything good. You know, I mean, there's years where I've been a freelance photographer where I'm going out spending my own money to go shoot something that I hope in some way could generate income for me. Like, I don't know if that's a reality. I don't know if that's a real thing that's going to happen. I can hope that it will. I can think that it will. I can, you know, I can do whatever I want. But the reality is, like, you need somebody who is going to understand. And also, you need to be honest with yourself. Like, is this a situation or is this an opportunity that's good, that's worthwhile? And I think that's one of the big things is that you don't, I think nowadays we all have a lot of really good opportunities. It's a matter of, like, which ones are the best. Which ones are the best opportunities? Which ones are the ones worth pursuing? Which ones are the ones that, like, we actually should be, you know, going and trying to do, you know, like, and that's like the hardest thing, I think, is more so is just like, you know, at what point do you say yes? At what point do you say no? You know? And so I think that for me, that has been an extremely good eye-opening experience, you know, to kind of realize that I need to say no. At certain times, I need to say yes. I need to be realistic, because the reality is that, you know, when I stopped being paid by Surfer Magazine or by any magazine on retainer, I was on freelance, and every paycheck, you know, even now, I don't know where it's going to come from. There's not like some exorbitant amount of money just being thrown at me because I have millions of followers. That'd be ridiculous. Although I think that the general public probably thinks that, which is like a little psychotic. Like, I work just like anybody else every day, 9 to 5 at the office. You know, I have an office. I paid for the office. I, you know, my workflow is a bit more, you know, maybe exorbitant than other people's because of the jobs we're doing and the type of work that we're doing. But I mean, the reality is, like, this is kind of what I built for myself based upon how hard I was willing to work in the beginning. Right. And so I think that's just kind of one of the I've tried to, like, break apart this mindset for people that everything just becomes easier at a certain point, right? That's not really the truth. And I want to make sure that folks understand that, like, you just need to be willing to invest in your own career and invest in your own time. And there's really nobody who's going to be like, hey, Chris, this is the best investment of time, or this is the worst investment of time. You kind of figure that out on your own. And I've very, very much learned that the hard way. So, like, allow me to be the first person to tell you that, like, this is not an easy, or like, this is a lifelong process, you know, for sure. So
early on, when you were in that freelancer phase and you were trying to, you know, go through that decision-making filter of like, maybe you were investing in the trip or you were going out and fronting your own money for something, like, how did you decide which things you would do then before it was a paid project?
That's a good question. That's a great one. I'd love to kind of address that. The one thing that's important is you have to understand is I'm still doing that now. Like, I still invest in my own projects. I'm not waiting for, like, some magic donor to come and pay for me to go and do this or that. Like, a lot of times what ends up happening is, and I think I gave this example at the, little, like, thing we did at Ranger Station was, you know, early on, I remember being in a situation where I had gone to Iceland maybe like 10, 12 times. And I was like, or, you know, maybe like 5 or 6 times. And I was just so psyched and eager and I loved it there. And it was amazing. And I remember shooting a lot of surfing and really wanting to kind of break out of that mold. And one of the things that kind of, like, dawned on me was, like, I was like, well, what do I want to shoot? You know, I want to shoot automobiles, maybe, you know, that's an example. I'd love to shoot, like, 4x4 and off-road and stuff that I, like, enjoy doing, right? Well, I think the problem is, like, I never dawned on me that, you know, nobody's ever going to just hire you out of nowhere. It just doesn't happen. It's not a reality. So what would I have to do then? I would have to kind of create a portfolio and prove that I can shoot it so that when the opportunity arises, people will be willing to do it. I think it's the same thing as you guys for like a podcast. Like, I don't think that before you reached out to me, you're like, hey, we're going to ask Chris to do this on our first podcast. No, you guys created a handful and, you know, you thought they were really good and you felt more confident. And you put that out there. So the similar thing for myself in the fact that I spent extra money on that trip and I created a portfolio of work that was basically based around like, you know, driving in Iceland, like automobile photographs and just stuff that I was kind of like excited about. I spent like $6,000 because I rented a Land Rover Defender and I created this body of work from there that I kind of felt proud to put out in the world so that when the opportunity arose, I had a portfolio. You know, it's not like a really complicated thing to think about. It's just that taking the time to do it and the effort, you know, same thing with aerial photography. You know, I feel like these days I've been lucky enough to kind of be known for for my aviation photographs. And
yeah,
that work wasn't something that was something that, like, just someone hired me to do someday. That was work that I create and like really put myself in the situation to pay for all that. I mean, that's what I did. You know, I would, and I still do that. You know, I go to Hawaii, I paid for, you know, the flights to go fly my family and myself around the island. And, you know, nowadays that work has a place to potentially generate some income. But what I'm trying to get at is that if you want to go out and you want to shoot motocross or surfing or whatever, you need to invest the time and the money to go out and create a portfolio. Because if you ever want to do it besides just for the fact of personally going out and creating that work because it feels good and you might want to be hired for it, then you need to generate a portfolio that you are proud to put in front of people and that you think could garner you some work, right?
Now, after that first shoot with the Land Rover in Iceland, did you just keep that in your back pocket and for the one day that an automobile came to you? Or did you go and say, hey, Land Rover, check out these shots. Do you want to buy them?
Yeah,
and let's work together.
I just kept it in my back pocket for when the opportunity arose, you know, and I kind of like infused it into my portfolio, you know, so I would go have like a meeting with a ad agency who might have represented one of these brands. And, you know, they're seeing like work that I've shot here and work that I've shot there. And then there's kind of like, oh, there's this new stuff, you know, there's this different portfolio that, oh, we didn't really know that Chris shot this or Chris shot that. So you're giving them a piece of your diversity and you're kind of allowing them to just see a bit broader scope of who you are. And then of course, if, you know, for example, somebody did come to me, which has happened a lot too, is like, hey, you know, we love Chris's landscape work, but has he ever shot this or has he ever shot that? And when someone comes and says that, you want to be able to say yes. So this is why I think it's important just to kind of in the beginning or at a certain point to shoot everything, you know, shoot everything you want and try to, whatever you're doing, to shoot stuff that continues to keep you excited, keep you inspired in some capacity, right?
Yeah, well, so now your portfolio is very diverse and not just with the type of stuff that you shoot, but also with the projects. I mean, you're not just a photographer. You also created an amazing film and then you have the book, The Boy Who Spoke to the Earth, which, by the way, I backed on Kickstarter and I have read to my nephew out in Arizona, like almost every time I visit him, he pulls out the book and asks me to read it. It's fantastic.
That's so cool. I love that. I mean, yeah, and this is the thing is like at a certain point, you kind of start to diversify, right? I mean, this is one of the, I think I gave this lesson too. Well, I mean, it wasn't really a lesson. I gave this piece of advice at that thing. Was kind of like, if you went for me, at least I was shooting surfing and that was my main goal, my everything, my focus in life. And I kind of realized really quickly that, that I was going to get stuck in this career path because I was so invested and so deeply knowledgeable about it that it was consuming everything. So I was very much tunnel vision, right? And I think this is why it's important to experiment, try other things and to not, you know, obviously I was a specialist, which was a really good thing because I honed in on what I was good at. But at a certain point, I didn't want to just appeal to one sort of client or one demographic or one world, right? I wanted to be able to work for Fortune 500 companies and, you know, brands like Toyota and Google and Apple and whoever. And so that was really an important thing. And I think just being able to kind of diversify was really critical.
Yeah, absolutely. And so when you were going down that path, how do you think you, I mean, what were some of the failures that you had when you were trying to, I guess, build out your portfolio, like lessons learned as you were starting to shoot new stuff or trying to add different things to that portfolio? Because I think there's certainly some lessons there for people who are maybe not even photographers, like who are just trying to get better at different aspects of their own entrepreneurial and venture or whatever. Yeah,
totally. Well, well, I think this is an important one, is that it's often really we convince ourselves, and I'm always, you know, for anybody who's tuning into this, like take everything I say with a grain of salt, because I'm really just here to share my own experience. Like you can call BS on anything you want and, you know, you're probably right. So, you know, don't get mad at me if none of this makes sense. And you're like, well, you know, I'm doing the exact opposite. You know, it's like, I don't know what to tell you, you know? But the truth of the matter is that I've gone to great lengths to convince myself that I needed to do everything well, and that wasn't true. And so the piece of advice that I have is like, don't try to convince yourself you need to do everything well. You don't. Paul Nicklin is hired to shoot assignments because he's the best at shooting under Antarctic ice. He can shoot great Afghan portraiture, but it's not his strong point. It's not what he's hired to do, right? So for me, like the beauty of working for the magazine is that when you are on staff and you have like maybe six other people on staff, you start to realize what their strengths are and your strengths are. Why do you want to compete with somebody else, you know? Or why do you want to go do something you don't want to do? I wanted to do what I wanted to do, and I started to realize what I was good at, and so I started to try to hone in on what I was good at. And I think that allowed me, gave me a lot of opportunity. And so I would say the biggest thing is just learning to be a specialist in something, learning to be the best you can, because that's why you're hired by clients, because you're the best. They don't say, oh, well, so-and-so can do this pretty good, you know, but he can also do all this other stuff. No, they want you because you're the best. And that's really what makes you stand out. So doesn't mean you can't try new things. Doesn't mean you can't, you know, expand your portfolio. But for me, I knew that I was really good at planning large scale expeditions. I was good at these longer form articles. I could really infuse the human into the landscape and shoot more of a timeless aesthetic. My work was kind of meant to be more something that would, I think, appeal to a larger audience group and be these more retrospective pieces. For example, I'm just thinking about through the editorial process. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I don't know. That's a piece of advice. I don't know if it makes sense or not, but hopefully
it It totally does. I think one of the quotes I pulled out from an article that I read about you before this interview is, it's nothing, you know, earth shattering, but I'm still hustling. It's a perpetual mindset. And so I think that speaks to that to a certain degree, because often people are saying, well, I want to move up, even if it's in a 9-to-5, I want to move up to a managerial role, or I want to be a better photographer of X, or I want whatever it is. But they never, even though it seems very common sense to be like, oh, I'm not good at that thing, I should probably, you know, take some like courses or, you know, build up my portfolio in that other space. People don't seem to think of it that way.
Right. They don't think of themselves as a business. Right. And I think that when you do think of yourself as a business, what you start to do is you start to like, say, if you're like, oh, all I make is $500 a month. Okay, so X amount's going to go to expenses and X amount's going to go to whatever. But then you need to think about, okay, how much am I putting into promotion? How much am I putting into marketing? How much am I putting into this? How much, like, how am I breaking this down so that I'm investing in myself, investing in my own business, and looking at myself like I am a Fortune 500 or whatever? And that's really how it should be, because that's how you're going to create growth. You know, is making that camera investment important, or is you know, I don't know, promoting this post you made on whatever to get more people to come out to your event. It doesn't matter. You know, it's just a matter of thinking that way. And if you don't have the money to think that way, then great. Think that way before you have the money, so you can think about your time and how you're spending that.
Right. That's almost the time you really want to do it, because you can be more scrappy and figure out how to do it like in a more street smart way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So how important do you think it's been for you to, like, you've built a personal brand, a brand of Chris Burkhardt. It's Chris Burkhardt Studios. Like, how important has it been to tie that to your name and yourself than to create some, you know, faux brand
entity?
Name?
You know, that's a funny one, because to be honest, there's a lot of times where I'm like, oh man, I don't want my name on this. Like, I feel like it's a really hard thing, because there are times where I don't really want my name to be attached to the business. I personally just want to have, like, I just want to be able to have it be called, you know, whatever, and have it be more of a collective or a production studio. Sometimes when my name is attached to it, it's always coming back to me. Me, which is great, but I'm only one person and I can only do so many things. So there's advantages and disadvantages. And I know that when people hire me, they want me, you know, and although I have a great group of people that helps me create the work that I do, my photo editors, my producer, et cetera, it is important, because I think the key thing in the end, in the long term, is like, this is my business. It's my name. I need to grow it as big as I can, because in the end, you know, when people are buying prints or they're buying whatever, like, I do want them to reference my work. And you're trying to create a legacy of some sort. And so that was the smartest thing. But it's really challenging. I'm not going to lie to you. That's not something I have a perfect answer on.
To what degree are you thinking about, you know, because it is so tied to you, and when somebody hires your studios, they're really looking for you, and that's tied to your time. And like, to what degree are you thinking about creating passive income like the book and like courses you might create that are not tied to your time?
I'm always thinking about passive income. I mean, if there's one thing that I am consistently considering, it's how to generate more passive income. And I think everybody should really be thinking about the same. I mean, the reality is that I've broken my income down into about five to six revenue streams. One of them being commercial photography, which pays the most, right? That's kind of our big and huge, like, you know, monster of income that I think works for us. The next thing would be, you know, image licensing, which is where, you know, we go shoot something and then a brand comes back and licenses it later. And then there's editorial work for magazines or this or that. And then after that, it kind of breaks. And those are things that I can't really control. You have to understand, the beauty of passive income is it's something that you can typically kind of control, because it's working in the background for you. So those are the ones I can't control, but they pay the most. And the ones I can control are the things like prints, books, merchandise that I'm doing my best to promote and sell and set the price point, go out and create workshops, speaking engagements, you know, corporate speaking, teaching, et cetera, et cetera. And then the very, very last thing that I do, I mean, this is like in terms of highest paid to lowest paid, is probably social media engagement. Like, I don't try to generate like a living off of social media at all, nor would I ever want to. Like, it doesn't seem like something that's very fulfilling. And although I could hawk gear all day and make money from it, it's just not something that I want to do. But the beauty of all that is it's important to stay active in each, mainly because, if God forbid there's a crazy recession, right? I want to be able to kind of make my business recession proof and allow myself to basically think about, okay, are my prints still going to be able to generate sales? Well, yeah, because I have an international client base and there's people outside of the U.S. There's people outside the U.S. that buy my work. And what have I invested in? You know, if you put all your eggs in one basket, that's, you're going to be in exactly that place. That's really dangerous to be in, right? So just something to kind of think about, I guess.
Now, you talked about setting a price point regarding a lot of your work. I mean, now you can demand a lot more, but like, how'd you start setting your price in those negotiations and start scaling your price? Like, what was that process like for you? A lot of times it's hard for creators to value themselves.
Well, that's a really challenging thing. And I'll tell you one thing. I never got really a raise or paid what I was worth from anybody that I ever worked with until somebody else offered me more. Meaning, like, I remember working for, you know, I won't name who, but I was on retainer and making, you know, X amount a month with X amount of travel. And until I came to them, you know, I worked for years, and until I came to them and said, oh, well, you know, so-and-so is going to pay me this much, they wouldn't give me a raise. And that's just like, that's just something that like, is a reality. And so you have to kind of understand, what is your worth? What is your value? You know, and how do you kind of inspire those whom you're working with or working for to be willing to pay that, right? That's the biggest challenge. And I think my rates in the beginning, they were really based upon the industry I was working in. So they were based upon the surf industry. And I was just basically, trying to kind of talk to other people, talk to other photographers. And here's the thing is like, I think there's a real advantage to trying to like communicate to people what you're getting paid and what they're getting paid. Because you don't want to undercut people, right? The worst thing people can do is try to go out and just like, oh yeah, I'm just going to spearhead, you know, this project and get paid X amount of money, because all you're going to do is lower the industry standard, right? So in the surf industry, at least there was a lot of like back and forth of like good, clean communication with a handful of people that I really loved. And so my rates kind of were born there. And then as I started to branch out into bigger and bigger circulation pools and or commercial audiences, I realized, okay, well, you can't charge, you know, Adidas the same as you charge like Quiksilver, right? Or something like that, because it's a different market. It's, they have more money, you know, yada, yada, yada. And I tried my best to try and spearhead that in the beginning by myself. But to be honest, it was really helpful to find somebody who really understood and really knew. And getting an agent, maybe, you know, 6 years into my career was a really helpful thing. But the reality is like, you don't need an agent until you're really, really busy doing this stuff all the time, where you can't go out and do the research yourself, right? The one thing that I've tried to offer other photographers as sort of a piece of advice is this. People are always like, oh, well, how do I find an agent? You know, that's so complicated, yada, yada, yada. And they act like it's this big thing. And I'm like, well, what's the concept of an agent? You know, and the reality is, well, they're just there to kind of be a shield for you so that you can be the fun, creative, awesome person that you want to be, right? You don't want to be the person who's following up in 3 months trying to get paid after you had the creative call. Like, that's not fun. Nobody wants to be in that position. So understand that, like, you, and this is bad advice, so just understand, I'm telling you this beforehand, so you can't come to me and be like, well, Chris Burkhardt said to do this, so this is bad advice. But if you can't find an agent, doesn't make sense, you don't want to pay that person some dividend, whatever, then just have a friend of yours operate in that way for you. Because all you're really there to do is be like, okay, cool, you know, so-and-so, awesome, like, I'm, you know, super interested in this job, thanks so much for reaching out, yada, 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 okay, I'm going to pass you over to, you know, so-and-so to kind of discuss rates and da-da-da-da-da. I'm breezing through this really quickly. This is not how the email should sound. But ultimately, that person can go on there and be like, oh, well, so-and-so's done this, and this is what they've been paid for this, and what's your budget? And they can really speak clearly and plainly about that, and not be as emotionally tied up and as creatively tied up in it as you are. Does that make sense? Like, and I've seen people even do it where it's the same person. It's just them on another email, right?
Oh, so, wow. That's a nice one. I like that.
I've heard about that, someone pretending to be their mom.
Yeah, you're not really pulling the wool over anyone's eyes. You're just like you don't want to be the person who's like trying to discuss rates and telling someone how badass you are and how good of a job you're going to do and trying to get paid the most amount of money. And be on set being like, I'm the creative person who's going to go create this work. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's a matter of separating those things. So what I've found is that in my life, the more I've been able to separate everything, the better. Like, I have a photo editor that works on the photographs and edits this. I have an office manager who deals with the bills and the this. I have, you know, these, and it gives me time to do what? Exactly what I wanted to in the beginning, which was take pictures. So that's kind of the one thing is like, we end up overcomplicating our lives and not being able to spread and delegate the responsibilities. And that's a really hard thing for people to do who run their own business and manage their own careers.
And I think that the lesson there too is you obviously have to put in the grind to get to that place to be able to be like, okay, now I'm going to hire other people to do the parts that I don't really want to do, of course. But the agent piece, I never would think about like hiring my friend, but that is actually a great idea. Jonathan, you want to hire me to be your agent?
You want to be my agent too? Co-host and agent?
There you go. I like that.
It might work out. So can you, you know, thinking back in that trajectory, you said you didn't have an agent until maybe 6 years into your career. Along that line, I like to kind of think of it whenever you see somebody who's, you know, successful by all appearances, there's that point where like the hockey stick starts to curve up, right? You're following that like trajectory and then it just turns. Like, can you think of the moment or a couple defining moments of when that curve started to really go exponentially up for you?
That's a really hard one because I get that question a lot. Like, where was the, what point was the turning point for you? You know, and
I mean, of course, everything builds on top of it.
You know, I don't really know, you know, what to say. There wasn't really, I guess the way I look at it is like, it's one of those things where you're just in the grind so deep in it that all of a sudden you like, you lift up and get a breath of air and you're like, oh, I'm over the hump. Oh, wow, things aren't as stressful. Like, that's the thing, is that there was years and years and years of time where nothing was really, like, making a lot of sense. Like, I was just working to work, right? And but the thing is, I loved what I was doing. I didn't want to be doing anything else. And even though it was work, and even though it was this, and even though, like I had said, I had kind of had to let go of some of my relationships and had kind of, like, you know, friends were calling to do this and that, and I was not going and doing this or that. It was challenging, but like, I also knew that I was kind of on the helm or on the heels of something really great. And I kind of felt like at the point that I sort of got on staff for a magazine and like, I got a retainer where like all of a sudden I had this little bit of money, and I think it started as like $500 a month or something and worked its way up to a couple thousand. I was like, oh my gosh, like, I have like a responsibility, like somebody, you know, and the things that like really helped along the way were like winning small awards and receiving some validation for your work. And I think that those were like little glimpses, tiny glimpses along the way. Nowadays, it's the opposite. Photographers come into this world thinking that the first thing they need to do is start a social media account, and only through the validation they receive is this career worthwhile. Mm-hmm. And I cannot express how backwards that is.
Yeah, the relationship with Instagram is interesting because obviously, like, there's a huge community that follows you on Instagram and through your personal and your professional accounts. But just like what you've been talking about this entire interview is, it's kind of a double-edged sword. So how do you feel about your relationship with Instagram and it being a tool for perpetuating some of the work that you have out there?
You know, again, like, it's hard. Is because it's one of those things where I love Instagram for a storytelling tool. That's what I like it for. Right. Do I like it because, like, I also like it because I get to go on there and be inspired, you know? Like, I can literally stop and sift through for a couple minutes and find, like, stuff that just keeps me so stoked on a day-to-day basis. That's great. But is it this tool where I want to judge the success of my work through that? Is it this tool where I want to, like, you know, rank myself as a photographer, rank myself as a human? Like, no, I don't. And I don't want to get into a situation where this becomes my tool for experiencing the world, right? Like, that is, and also I think what ends up happening is that innately we kind of end up judging the success of what we do and the places we go based upon what other people have seen. And that's so hard. Like, that sucks kind of, you know, that all of a sudden you could go out there and create the most beautiful photograph you've ever shot, and you could go post it online and someone's like, oh, well, I've seen that angle 1,000 times. Well, you know what? It was meaningful to me, and that's why I did it. And what should I be driven by? The fact that so-and-so has seen this, or you've seen it online or whatever? Like, it's a really hard thing. And I think that is one of the things that I feel really bad for photographers starting out. But you don't need to do that, you know? So
it's definitely a very confusing landscape right now. It is hard to look at very, you know, huge accounts and compare yourself that way. And it kind of feels like a chicken or the egg situation, right? It's like, were they a great photographer before Instagram, or did they get a lot of followers and then Instagram brought them success and brought them brands looking for them to shoot things?
Right.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. And I don't know the answer, you know?
So when you say you stop for a few minutes to poke around and be inspired, are there a couple of accounts that come to mind that you're constantly inspired by?
I mean, just you know, friends of mine, people I've met on there, you know, people that I've met a lot of really cool people on there. That's one of the raddest parts, you know? And that's kind of something that like is sort of funny because like, you know, I actually interact with these people. I look to Instagram as a texting tool, a tool to meet people. And when those relationships actually materialize, it's really cool. Because most of the people that I spend time with these days, even the people who are my employees, I've met because of social media, right? That's a really cool thing to me. Like, that's the reason that I like it. And that's what I look forward to using it for.
It's funny. That's the reason Instagram would tell you that's the reason it exists, right? So it's no big mystery that the people that are finding the most success building communities on Instagram are the people that are using it to network like they're building real communities and not just posting to get likes.
Yeah, exactly.
So it actually brings me back to another thing that you had mentioned briefly at the Ranger Station. I don't want you to have to go through that again, but it is the importance of mentorship. And a lot of the things that we talked about earlier today, but also just at the Ranger Station, were basically things that, again, are like common sense. They seem common sense when you hear them out loud, but you really need kind of a kick in the ass, to be frank, to hear them from someone that maybe you don't know or like a person that you look up to in a certain way. So can you talk about how important mentorship was to you and why you think that's so important to, you know, build out the skills that you want to build out?
Well, I want to be honest with you. And I think mentorship is important. I don't think it's a necessity. Mm-hmm. I think that it's important. It's important in the regard that you know, if you are trying to learn, and this is one of the ways to kind of jump past a lot of those hardships that you'd either have to learn your own way, you know, or something along those lines. So, but the truth of the matter is, for me, I think the reason I was seeking mentorship and more of a father figure, because I didn't have one growing up. Like, I was raised by my mom in a single parent home. And so there was a lot of, you know, self-worth kind of issues, not having a dad. And those were things that I was seeking emotionally early in my life. And so I want to make sure that there's some like clarity there as to like, for me, why it was such an important thing, and also just offering, you know, a bit of insight into kind of what made, I guess, my pursuing a mentor like such an important thing. And those people really, they really, you know, did a lot for me at a time in my life when I was like really vulnerable and really needed like guidance. Right. Do I think everybody needs mentorship? No, not at all. Some people can do really well in school. Some people can figure out everything they need to in school or online or whatever. For me, it was a mixture of like this mentorship, but then also going out on my own, you know, like I was super funny, but I realized like until I was 19, I hadn't really spent any time by myself. And so it was interesting because what I ended up doing was I kind of ended up doing these two internships. And they weren't really mentorships so much as they were just internships, mm-hmm. right, that had a mentoring element. And a part of that mentorship was kind of them making me feel comfortable going out on my own and taking photographs. That's exactly what I did. I mean, I spent months in the Utah desert just wandering out at night, getting stuck, breaking down in my car, going and shooting photos. And it was – there was never a single person who like – was like, Chris, set up your camera like this, put it on the tripod like this. This is how you do it. It was mainly about being around those people and understanding, even just through like a second degree of sponging, you know, off of them, what a confident, successful photographer looked like. And I felt like, okay, I can do this too. You know, I feel like all the technical stuff I learned on my own. That's super easy. In fact, it irritates me when people like don't utilize literally the power they have at their fingertips. Like, you want to learn how to shoot night photography, Google it. You want to learn how to use your camera, read the manual. You want to learn how to, like, you know, you want to learn how to do image stacking, you know, do it. That's not what photographers need. They often need a pat on the back and a little bit of guidance and a little bit of and a lot of criticism. And the sad thing I see is there's a lot of artists who never fully develop because they don't know how to handle criticism well. And to be honest, that's like 99.9% of people that I see in any creative industry, right? They're the most sensitive people you've ever met in your life, and they don't know how to, like, merge. And that's why people end up working for someone else forever, because going out on your own is a very harsh environment. And it's just not built for everybody, I think, if you can't take that feedback that the world is going to offer you.
So, Chris, I've got two questions to just wrap this up here. I know we want to be conscious of your time. We ask everybody at the end of every interview, what does stoke mean to you? And then just what are you most stoked about right now?
I mean, stoke is something that one of the terms I've probably used most in my life. And I would say that if anything, it's just the ability to work and live and exist in a way where the glass is always half full. And you're looking at life in a way that, you know, although it might be hard and it might be grueling, like, you have to embrace some sort of excitement for whatever comes your way. Like, have you ever just thought about the next challenge that's coming your way and just, like, smiled about it and like created a positive, like, mantra or a positive energy around it, as opposed to some looming negativity? Like, to me, that's stoke. And that's something that we can live by. It's an actual adjective, you know, it's an action word. And so to put that into practice means that we need to kind of, you know, go against the grain, be a bearer of light, you know, be somebody who, like, uplifts somebody else. You know, I don't care if this is a religious perspective or if this is just your personal perspective or whatever, but to be able to be somebody who lifts up other people is, to me, like, the best thing you could ever do. And that doesn't necessarily mean you need to hold a camera to do it.
Wow. Every time we ask that question, I just look at Jonathan and I just smile. I keep getting all these amazing answers.
It's different every time, and it's amazing every time. That was fantastic. So, yeah. So what are you most stoked about right now? What's just, like, bringing you that level of excitement in your life?
I mean, honestly, lately I've just been riding my bike a lot, and that's been fun. It kind of got too hot for climbing season, so I've just been, like, spending hours and hours behind on the saddle riding and trying to enjoy, like, getting out. And it's always hard because you know, working so much, you get these, you know, moments at home, moments not. And I feel like, for me, I love being able to be home for this period of time and get into something, and just, like, it just gets me so excited. It gets me something to look forward to. You know, I love setting little goals, the tiniest ones, because that just gets me stoked. So I'm going to go ride Mount Whitney to Death Valley, or Death Valley to Mount Whitney on Friday, and that should be fun.
Awesome.
Hell yeah.
Well, that is rad. Thanks so much for joining us, Chris. We will put all of your links to everything in the show notes, but I recommend everyone follow you, obviously, on Instagram, even though we had kind of an interesting conversation about that.
Do you hang out elsewhere on social, or is Instagram your thing?
I mean, Facebook we use a lot, and you know, honestly, like, I feel like, you know, Snapchat's kind of dead, but Instagram is just, like, one of the best ways. And honestly, like, in person, like, if you're ever, anybody's ever in Pismo Beach, come by the gallery. Like, I like to just meet people and hang out and catch up and stuff like that.
Yeah. Awesome. And, yeah, and obviously your website, where they can buy some of those prints as well.
Yeah, exactly. Or a book. I'd love to sign a book for someone, for sure.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much, Chris, for joining us today.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you guys so much. I really appreciate the time, and I'm stoked to, stoked to make it happen.
For sure, man. It's been awesome. And I will be sure to take you up on that. I'll bring my nephew and the boy who spoke to the earth to your gallery one of these days.
Yeah, please. That'd be awesome. I'd really dig that.
All right, man. Well, have a great time with that ride, and we'll catch you soon.
For sure, you guys. I'll stay cold. See you soon.
All right. See ya.
All right. Bye.
You know what I loved about that interview, Emily?
What?
Chris is not only an inspirational guy with an inspirational story, but he's just real.
Yeah.
Everything like
he doesn't sugarcoat.
No,
anything.
Everything he talks about is just like in your face. Like, do you have what it takes to make it? Here's what you need to know. And yeah. And he like yeah, and he's like motivational, but also like this isn't for everybody, and that is the real deal.
I love it that he's one of the most authentic people I've ever spoken to in my life. So it was a real pleasure having him on, and I felt super inspired afterwards to just hustle the hell out of my life and make it rad.
What are you going to do?
Oh, that was a lot. You put me on the spot.
Putting you on the spot.
I just signed up for a digital marketing certification right after. It was right after. Definitely wasn't a couple weeks after. Definitely not. So I'm pretty psyched about that. It's all online, and I'm going to get some more skills.
That's great. I do appreciate your initiative in the marketing realm.
What are you going to do, man?
What am I going to do?
Yeah. Oh, man, are you inspired or what?
I'm always inspired.
You're exploring.
I'm exploring inspired. Yeah, no, I am in the middle of planning my next big expedition, which I won't go into detail yet.
Oh, but that is such a cop out.
No, I can't get into it right now.
Whatever,
Stokecast listeners, you will have to just keep listening.
Oh, shoot.
So to that point, if you are enjoying these interviews and continuing to listen to us, please go into iTunes and leave us a review. They really, really help. We appreciate it. Maybe we'll read it in a future episode and give you a little shout out if you leave your social handle in a review. And also go to thestokecast.com or exploreinspired.com/stokecast, and you can find all of the past episodes, the show notes from this episode, and make sure you subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts, and go leave a review. Leave a review.
Do it now. Do it right now.
Be inspired to do it now. All right, cool. And be sure to follow Chris if you don't already at Chris Burkhard on Instagram and chrisburkhard.com. He does workshops. He sells prints. He makes movies. He has just incredible photos and stories from traveling the world that are worth checking out. Hope you enjoyed this episode.
We love you. Bye.
Thanks so much for tuning in. I'm Emily Holland.
And I'm Jonathan Ronzio. We'll catch you next week with another episode of the Stokecast.